Mr. Burke, congrats on the release of your book, sir.
Thank you. I think people will enjoy it.
I bought a copy. I ordered mine online. That should arrive, it says, on Friday. Perry is still holding out hope that he's going to get a freebie from you. I wasn't banking on that, Brian.
Indigo.ca, Perry.
All right. I just thought our relationship
now, you know.
Such that I'll get it. Tell me this. When did the idea start? When was day one? Because I'm sure you've been asked for a long time that you just said, you know what, I'll finally put pen to paper.
Well, first off, I hope people enjoy it. I enjoyed writing it, and I think it's I think there's a lot of good stories in there and a lot of good information. I was asked to write a book after we won the Cup in 07, and I said no. Stephen Brunn asked me, and I said no. I said, not, you know, Stephen, not that I wouldn't want you to write it, but I still got a lot of hockey ahead of me. It turns out I was right. But so my last year in Calgary, the deal I had made with the Flames was they could walk away at the end of any season. And so at the end of my fifth season in February, the late, great Ken King came in and said, you know, we're going to move ahead without you after the season. So I was like, okay, that was the deal we made. And but that was in February, and we were in the playoffs that year. So that left like 4 months, three plus months, where I was still involved, but had way less to do. So I started doing an outline. I thought, okay, I have some dead time here, and who knows what I'll do after this, right? Who knows if I even have a job. So I started doing an outline. If I were going to write a book, what would people find interesting? So you start off, obviously, the five team stops, the time at the league, the Brendan story, the formative years. And I hate autobiographies where people spend a lot of time on their childhood. So I didn't. I remember I bought Alec Baldwin's biography because I think he's interesting. And I think the first three chapters were on going to grammar school and stuff. I'm like, I don't care about any of that. I don't care about anything you did until you started acting. So the only part I put in about my youth is that when we moved to Minnesota when I was 12, and I fell in love with the game, and I started playing the next year at 13. So really very little about my early childhood, a little more in college, about playing for Lou Lamoriello and why I went to law school, and then signing with the Flyers, American League. Harvard's a real brief chapter because I didn't enjoy law school very much. And then the meat and bones, or meat and potatoes on the thing, are about when I started representing players, and then in 1987 when Pat Quinn hired me to come to Vancouver, and I had the great fortune to meet both of you.
Special
is right. What was it? You know, it's funny listening to people in interviews when they've got a book to promote and they share the experience. They often talk about it getting very emotional at times. What was the most emotional part for you?
Well, I'll guess.
What was it? Yeah. About Brendan?
Yeah.
And did you find it was it hard?
Yeah, it was very difficult to write to write a little bit about it, and then to have to dictate. Stephen Brunt actually wrote the book, right? It's all in my words, but he polished it up and did a great job. He's a great writer. He's become a good friend. And they had me read the book on the audiobooks too, so if you listen to the chapter about Brendan, you can tell I have a hard time. Even now, I can't talk easily about it 10 years later. So that was the worst part, the hardest part.
Did you involve your kids a lot to say, hey, what happened here? What did we do when we were moving here and all that kind of stuff? Just to, hey, we forget a lot of stuff. Was there a lot of back and forth with your family to go, hey, fill in some of the blanks here?
Nope.
Nothing? Did they learn stuff about their dad?
They haven't seen it yet.
I mean, they don't got a copy yet?
I don't have a copy here at my house. Like someone asked me the other day, can I get an autographed copy? I'm like, they're going to at some point send some books over here, but I don't have them yet. It just went into the bookstores on Tuesday. So I don't have one copy of it here. I have a phony one that I used in a photograph session yesterday where I'm holding up the book. It's just the jacket of the book, the cover. On some other book. I don't even know what book it is, the other book. So I don't have a copy of it. And the kids, I told them, they can indigo.ca.
Wasn't there a TV show, Burke's Law? Is that where the name came from?
Yes, that's where the name came from.
Hit TV. Did you even watch that show?
No.
How long was the process then?
Well, I did between February and when I left it in end of April or May. I wrote an outline of about 100 pages, and I paid a woman to type it for me because I can't type. And so I wrote it all out by hand. And my handwriting is atrocious. This woman is amazing that she could read any of it. And I gave that to Stephen Brunt. He read it, and he said, "This is garbage. You write like a lawyer. No one's going to want to read this." And I said, "Well, what do you think I'm paying you for?" So he used it as an outline for the book, kind of a, you know, the skeleton of the book. And then I met with him, I don't know, probably 15, 20 times, and dictated the chapters of the book, like what was the first tour of duty in Vancouver, second tour of duty in Vancouver, what was Hartford like? And it's written truthfully. You know, here are the challenges you face as a GM. It's designed to be a book that GMs and young management people would learn from. And here are the challenges you face dealing with owners. Here are the challenges you face dealing with players. Here's the challenges you face dealing with coaches. All of those things.
Brian Burke, a presentation of Andrew Sherritt Limited, your plumbing and heating wholesaler, a proud family-owned BC company helping local business since 1892. And Brian, Braden Holtby and Nate Schmidt are the newest members of the Vancouver Canucks. What do you assess from what the Canucks have done through free agency so far over the last week?
Well, obviously they got raided pretty hard, but that's, I think what Jim Benning has done to get the team as far as he did this past year and put these young pieces in place has been remarkable. And Vancouver's a market that's never happy. They wanted him to sign every player, Markstrom, Tanev, Toffoli, and then go out and sign six more. And in a hard cap system, it's just not realistic. So I think Holtby is a great replacement. They're going to have to figure out at some point, and Ian Clark is in a much better position than I, to figure out the split of games, how much Thatcher Demko is ready for. Because what he showed us in the playoffs was amazing. I'm not sure he's ready to do that on a nightly basis yet, so they'll have to figure out how they split the games. I'm anticipating a 60-game season, roughly. So a 40-20 split if you have a true 1A and 1B, or if they go with a starter and a backup. But I think you're going to see a much more compressed schedule. If the Canadian border stays closed, they're going to need to have a Canadian division. We talked about this last week, I believe. And so you're going to play, if it's a 60-game schedule and there's seven teams, guess how many times you're going to play those other teams. And that's assuming they don't do any east-west further, you know. Like in the old six-team league, you played everyone 12 or 14 times.
Yep.
And so, and you're not going to see Calgary come to Vancouver and play one game. They're going to come and play two games. Or play three and four. Like, you're going to see a much more compressed schedule, much more attention to detail on the costs of travel. And so there are going to be challenges for goaltenders going back-to-back more than they're used to. So you got to have two. I think the Canucks do. I think Braden Holtby, he's got a ring. Solid goaltender, solid guy. I like it.
When you heard the numbers that the Tanevs and the Markstroms and the Toffolis got, Did that just clarify? Yeah, there made no sense for Jim to get into a bidding war.
Yes, and I think that's what fans get it. It's like someone asked me, and I do a radio show in Edmonton, and the host is way more interesting than you two, by the way.
He asked
me about Mike Smith and Koskinen, and I said, "Well, did you not watch MacGyver when the show was popular? I mean, you have so much cap space, you've got to figure out a way to make it work the best you can." And that's what they did, and that's what Benji's doing. I think Nate Schmidt's a really good hockey player. I think people are going to like him. He's doing within the cap constraints he has. The Luongo hit, the Erickson contract, those are the big anchors. But within the constraints he has, he's put a pretty good product together in my mind.
Brian Burke here on Sportsnet 650, and you look at, I guess they're obviously incomplete right now from a top six standpoint, and, you know, they got to probably figure out the bottom pairing for the Canucks here, you know, depending on what they ultimately choose on. You got Jake Virtanen set for an October 28th arbitration hearing. Elliot Friedman, your colleague and our hockey insider, suggesting that this one probably doesn't get to arbitration. That the numbers that Jake's looking at here, Brian, is you know, he could be looking at a potential reward of $3 million based on the numbers. What's fair for Jake, though, in your mind, if they're going to try to get this done beforehand, whether he stays or goes, like, do you give him a little more term with a lower AAV? Like, what's fair in your mind for a kid like Jake Virtanen, who's been a little enigmatic, if, to put it gently, here over the last six years?
Not a little enigmatic. He is enigmatic. I mean, if you open the dictionary to the word enigmatic, his picture's probably in the margin. And I used the dictionary as a prop on Hockey Night this year, and people were laughed their tails off. So who's ever? My kids don't know what a dictionary is. They Google a word if they got to look it up. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a hard one. Now, I don't comment on what I think specific players should get paid, because I did it my first year with one player who I really like, and I came in with a much lower number than his, and he was sour. And he said, "You have no right to interfere in these things." And I said, "You're right." So I'm not going to say Jake should get this or that, but that is the debate. The enigmatic play, 18 goals, gives you a really good arb case, but there are a lot of nights when Jake didn't play well enough, and he's frustrated the coaching staff, and they're not going to take a big number on that. They'll walk away if it's too big. So they should be able to figure out something that's fair. Clearly, there's been a market adjustment. If you look at the money the free agents are getting, other than Petrangelo and Krug, other than Taylor Hall on a one-year deal, the values have dropped. And the effects of the pandemic are being dealt directly to the players and the teams. The Canucks have laid off staff, I'm sure. Guys have had to take pay cuts. Scouting staffs are being cut. It's being felt across the board. It's being felt on our side of the industry as well. So there will have to be an adjustment in expectations. They should be able to get something done. I will say this. Jake drives me nuts, but deep down, he's a good kid. He's worth some trouble. You know, what I used to say to players, you're worth a little trouble to me. You might be a pain in the ass, but you're worth a little trouble, because they think there's redeeming qualities underneath you, and I think we'll help you figure it out. Remember I said that to Nazem Kadri when he was a first-year pro. I said, you're going to be a handful, Naz, but you're worth a little trouble. So as a manager, it was worth it to me to work with him and cultivate him, put up with the odd mistake. I mean, one day he parked in the fire lane at the practice rink, right in front of the door where the players would have to get out if there was a fire. And so Dave Poulin, who worked for me, came in and said to the trainer, "Whose car is that?" He said, "It's Naz's car." So he made Naz park it at the farthest spot away from the parking, from the door. And he said, "For the next 30 days, you have to park there." And you know, in the middle of winter in Toronto, walking an extra 60 or 70 feet isn't pleasant in February. So, but I remember talking to Naz saying, "You're worth some trouble, Naz, because you're going to figure it out. And we're going to help you figure it out." And I think Jake's the same way. I think they've got to be patient with him. He's given them gray hair, but he's a good kid, and he's got physical ability. They got to be patient with him.
Well, and it's funny. No matter all the changes they make, it seems like in the last couple of years, it comes down to, boy, Jake Virtanen, good Jake Virtanen, could really swing this team. Let me ask you this. Yes, we've seen a little bit of a market correction, but in all your cases with arbitration, and one that Brendan Morrison is always legendary out here on the West Coast, you know, is it difficult because do you wonder how that arbitrator is reading the financial world that we are in now, Berkey? Or does he simply, he can't just go look at numbers like he would have in the past, can he?
Well, I only had one arbitration case in my whole career, and that was Brendan Morrison. Because I don't know if you guys remember, we had a rule. If you file for arbitration, we're going. So we got all of our deals done by June 30th, with the deadline for filing. Because I tell the players, if you file, we are going. The one exception was Todd Bertuzzi filed one year because we were like pennies apart, and the agent called me and said, "Look, I'm going to file, but we'll get this done in the next 72 hours, and we did, Pat Morris. So I only had two players file. I only went with one, and that was Brendan. And, yeah, I was hard on Brendan in the arbitration, but that's the process. I said, "Brendan, you filed. You invited me out in the alley. You can't complain now if you get kicked in the groin. You started this fight." Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think the arbitrator is going to have a difficult task this summer of reconciling last year and the year before arbitration awards versus what was paid this summer. You look at the Elliot Friedman was on radio here this morning on NHL Network, and he said last year 30 guys got AAVs of over $3 million the first day, and this year it was three. So, you know, face it, there's a market correction coming. It's not just the teams that are going to suffer with no fans. So if you're the Aquilini family, you're going to suffer in the building because there's not going to be any fans to start with. And then when they do start letting fans, it'll be socially distanced. The Aquilinis are in the restaurant business. That business is in the tank. So it's not like the owner is making hundreds of millions of dollars from other businesses and is happy to lose a couple million dollars on the hockey team.
No, 100%. There was a story about how Tom Gallardi's feeling that right now, you know, with the Dallas Stars and everything that they've endured over the last little while. You know, there, Bill Foley was very outspoken on an interview yesterday in Las Vegas, the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, and talking about thinking how, you know, in all likelihood, the border's not going to open. There'll be a Canadian division. But there's also been talk about, you know, the Canadian American Hockey League teams staying on this side of the border. Now, the Leafs, the Senators, the Habs, the Jets, they're kind of covered. You know, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, different story. And the Canucks are looking at Utica. Brian, if they ultimately bring the AHL team here on this side of the border, and I'm talking about the Canucks specifically, what makes the most sense? Like, do you play them here, but with the cost of travel, and if you're not having fans in the stands, might it make more sense to maybe keep them Eastern-based because of the cost of travel?
Well, I have pondered many aspects of this return to play.
Yeah.
But I keep forgetting the crossing the border. There's a 14-day quarantine. That's not going to change anytime soon that I can see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe the league goes to a taxi squad for the Canadian teams that have their farm team. Calgary's farm team is in the States as well. Edmonton's farm team is in the States. I mean, so they're going to have to come up with maybe a taxi squad. Maybe your top three prospects get to pay their AHL salary but get to practice with the big club. I don't know. I haven't gotten that far yet. But the Canadian division to me is inevitable because the border's not going to open in time. I don't think it's going to open anytime soon. I don't think the 14-day quarantine period is going to change. And so there's a lot to be resolved. But I think you're going to see a Canadian division for sure.
Is Bill Foley here from the NHL headquarters today? I don't know if you heard it, but it was a 55-minute interview. Canadian division, oh, they're probably going to play like, you know, six games, seven games in 14 days. I mean, he let a lot of stuff out, and it's coming from an owner. Would he hear from Gary Bettman in the league office this morning?
Yep. Last night he would have. Because I heard excerpts of it or quotes from it last night. So I think that they're yeah, he's going to hear about that.
What's the most inflammatory, saying that, you know, we're looking at probably February, and we'll share some of these with the audience coming up in a few minutes, but he also kind of touched on, like, the financial struggles for teams, disclosing figures. He's going to lose probably $125 million if there's no fans in the stands. But also the Islanders had to trade Devon Taves because the Islanders are up against it. Is it when you start talking about other teams is where you kind of get the old slap on the wrist?
Well, you're not allowed to talk about other teams' finances or anything anyway, so yeah, that would be a problem. But I think the Islanders traded Devon Taves to make sure they could match an offer sheet. I think that was purely a defensive move. I don't think it was the financial struggle. Understand, some of our owners are directly impacted by COVID-19 and have taken a huge hit business-wise. Tom Gallardi, my dear friend, has taken a huge hit. Mm-hmm. And so that's problem number one. So you go back 12 months ago, and you say, okay, Dallas Stars are drawn pretty well. They're a good team. Tom's other business are going well. Okay, everyone's happy. Now all of a sudden, the hockey team gets, the revenues get decimated, and that owner doesn't have that core business that he relies on to provide revenue for him. You look at the Pagulas in Buffalo. They're in the natural gas business. Natural gas is in the sewer. But there are other owners that are not nearly as deeply impacted. And so the ones that are, you're going to see, this is what, I just said this on another radio show. I want to know what a team's budget is, not what their cap is. I know what the cap is. But you've got owners coming and you've seen staff cuts, layoffs. And so this is, I mean, this is the world we live in. It's impacted our industry. We've had layoffs and cutbacks. So and I don't think the players fully appreciate yet just how deep the cuts are. So I predicted back in March, everyone said flat cap, flat cap, flat cap. I said, no, there's going to be a rollback for sure. And there's a 30% rollback. So imagine a player making $6 million. He's going to eat two of that. That's never going to hit his bank account close to two. So it's real. And there's going to be a rollback next year too. And I like what the league is doing. They're saying, all right, we're going to pay as if the cap's going to be flat. We're going to pay current wages based on what the guys make. And then we'll adjust whatever rollback there is at the union level. The league and the union will decide what it's going to be. And so to me, that's the only way the league can go forward and attach realistic values to players' salaries. But Brendan Gallagher just got a $6 million year extension. Guess what? In year one of that deal, now he has an existing year, so it's a poor example, but in year one, take one third of that off. And it'll be at least that again next year.
Yeah, he gets, I think, a $9 million balloon payment one season. I think about year three in there. But, Brian, we're up against the clock here. Great stuff as always. The book's out now for people that want to order it. I got my copy waiting in the wings. I'm really looking forward to reading it. I could hear the emotion in your voice talking about Brendan even here this morning. And, man, like, you know, to this day, all I want to do is give you a hug with what you've had to endure with that. And as a fellow parent, I certainly empathize. And I'll tell you this much, in the wake of that tragedy, man, there's a lot of people around the world that got a big friend in you and what you've done so much for the LGBTQ community over the last decade or so. So, I mean, that's something I think a lot of people give you thanks for, and I think you don't get enough credit for. So thank you, and we'll talk to you again next week, all right?
That's very kind. Thank you.